Welcome to Songwriter Trysts, an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I want to talk to other songwriters about the power of songwriting, talk about their journey and how they got to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. To support the podcast and follow our journey, you can find us on songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Jasmine Bade. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Let's start the podcast by you sharing a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
Yeah, for sure. I was born in Melbourne, Australia, obviously. Mm-hmm. Well, it could be Melbourne, Florida, actually. When you say that over here in America, people don't really know. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I was 6 years old. I heard country music, heard Casey Chambers for the first time. Became like weirdly obsessed because not many people in Melbourne are super into country, and I didn't care. So I kept singing it, kept playing. I would play in school assembly. I went to a school right in the middle of like the city, Melbourne, in the city. And people were like, what are you doing? And I don't know. It didn't really faze me too much. And I went to Tamworth when I was seven. Like I guess I made my parents take me. And
that's crazy.
I know. I got even a necklace engraved, like this cheap little star-shaped necklace, and it says Tamworth 2004. And I know, it's so funny. And I remember I wanted to meet Becky Cole so bad. She was doing a show and I was running on the footpath and I fell over. And someone helped me get up, and I look up and it's Becky Cole. And only just a few weeks ago, she played my song on her Saturday Night Country radio show. And it was like this big, like full circle moment for me. So I kept doing it. Country music festivals where I could find them. And always the dream was to come to Nashville. So when I was 17, I hopped on over for a month when I finished school and had a lot of cool things going on and happened to me then. And went back home, went to uni, studied music, and then moved on over straight after a couple of years ago. And that's where I'm at now. I studied a Bachelor of Music majoring in singer-songwriting at the University of Tasmania. They have a conservatory of music there in APRA. If I'm sure listeners probably know, but the Australian Performing Rights Association, they give a songwriting scholarship there. A lot of people don't know that. And I didn't know that until just before. And honestly, I don't think many other people applied.
No, that's downgrading yourself. I won't allow that on the podcast. Sorry.
I mean, you know, I really don't think they did. And I, you know, my audition was like, sing a few songs you've written and then do like a music theory exam. But I could have done terribly on the theory exam. Like they wouldn't have cared. Luckily I had done a lot of theory in school, so it was fine. But I was like, okay, I guess I'll sing some songs I wrote about some boys and hope that's good enough. And I guess it was, and I got a free ride there and had the time of my life. Absolutely studying in Tassie. Hobart has my heart really. And I tell everyone, you go to Australia, go to Melbourne, go to Sydney, whatever, but you have to go to Tassie. Love it.
They're very supportive of country music down there too.
Yeah, they love all the weird stuff.
Yeah.
They'll like your bubblegum pop, whatever you want, but if you're not mainstream, they're going to embrace you.
Yeah.
So it was so fun, and I got to meet the best musicians. I got to have a songwriting lesson every week with like these ARIA award winning writers, Michael Spivey and Charles Jenkins. They helped teach us, just learn the things that I think a lot of other music degrees maybe wouldn't get to teach you. And I actually did do a semester at RMIT doing music industry, but it wasn't really for me. I had to start studying philosophy. And I was like, why?
I don't know why anyone studies that subject. It's
how do you study it? I don't know.
I don't understand. It's more of a debate, isn't it? Really just debating it for a long period of time.
Well, I don't know if you've seen The Good Place, the TV show.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is like philosophy a bit. I don't know.
It's like 101 philosophy. But it's existential also thinking.
Yeah, so it just wasn't for me. So I quit there. Luckily, I had a year on everyone because I started school a year early. So by the time I stopped there, I was actually just the same age as everyone else.
Okay. I should be sitting on a couch right now with my friends Ben and Jerry and tears running down. Oh, sweatpants and no makeup broke down over the breakup. This one's like the last. I don't call them exes, I just call them wives.
I lived in a college, like actual college, like in dorms.
Yeah.
Which for Australia is like hardly anyone does.
Yeah.
Made me feel like I was a bit American. We did O week, you know, and in O week, orientation week, we did mild hazing, which was fun because it was mild.
Mild tasing.
Hazing, not tasing.
What's hazing?
So like they do it here, like when you're like, if you're like wanting to be in a sorority or like a fraternity, where they like make you do crazy stuff. Like for example, at like 4 a.m, they all banged on our doors and made us wake up and go to the top of a mountain that was freezing and had snow on it. And And then they're like, if you want, you can hike down. And we're like, no, but a few people did. Things like that, you know, and like, you know, we were all 18. So it's Australia, it's fine. Drinking things, you know, and we were all like, yeah, this is so fun. But then they'd secretly whisper in our ear, like, by the way, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. Because it was like, because they were actually really wonderful and mental health was a really important thing for them. Like, they did like a, like,
so they peer pressured you, but you didn't actually.
They peer pressured us, but then told us in our ear, you don't actually have to do this.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, it was like 2015 and that kind of stuff is a no-go anymore. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did and the next year I actually worked in the college council as a social convener and helped organize the ball and everything. And we got dog therapy. So we got dogs to come in the middle of exams. And it was, you know, we'd have movie nights where, you know, everyone would bring their mattresses in the common area. Like, I just had the best time. I made the best friends. I'm still in touch with so many of them. I do meet people here who are at about the same level I am in the industry, but are a couple of years younger because they didn't go to college or uni.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll be like, oh, if I didn't go, you know, maybe I could have been a few years ahead. But then I'm like, actually, no, I had the best time ever. That's something I would never want to take away. And life is not all about, you know, where you can be at the earliest stage. It's about living. And I really, really lived in that time.
That's awesome. And it is about perfect timing. And you've had some experiences that no one else will ever be able to relate to. I mean, you know, they haven't had that.
Exactly.
And so you've got that to draw on. And as a songwriter, your life experiences is your value, you know.
Exactly. So. I can't write without experience. And I wrote a lot. I wrote so much in uni. I would be in my little tiny little room and writing at like 2 a.m. I feel like that's really when I came to be the writer that I am now. Up until then, it was a little bit too much. Like I'm trying to be Taylor Swift. And then I finally was like, no, actually I can be my own artist because she already exists.
I love that. And that's such a common thing. So many, Taylor Swift has inspired so many young women that they can be in the music industry because she was young, but also the fact that she was a female and in the music industry when it, you know, it has been very fairly male dominated for such a long time. That inspiration has been like spread like wildfire, but it's beautiful that you came to the realization that you get to be the first you, which is awesome.
Yeah, like, I heard someone say that, I think, that they were like, they said, I actually think that it might have been this guy, Rick Barker, and he was actually her manager in her beginning, like her Taylor Swift album, her Fearless album. And then he stepped back because he was like, I can't do this with a family because you have to be on the road 24/7. He kind of helped a lot of artists in town. And I discovered him before I moved here. And I think he said that, like, you know, there's already Taylor Swift. There's already Kelsey Ballerini. There's already, you know, so you got to bring something different. Don't write music that's on the radio because that's already on the radio. You got to write what's next. It's always exciting and nerve-wracking because other industries, I think, you get to follow a textbook and know that you're going to be able to do the same as someone else and you're going to get there. But here, it's in any creative industry, it's kind of touch and go and follow your own path and hope that that works out in the end.
Yeah, you kind of just got to do what makes you feel good. And I think that's what is contagious, that's what's attractive to everyone else, is watching someone be free in who they are.
Yeah, and hope that they don't crash and burn. And we all do a little bit, you know, and that's okay. It's part of the process.
Well, it's like why we watch, like, car races, you know. Like, we want them to win, but we also kind of want to watch some people crash.
Oh, my God, that's so true.
Isn't that terrible? But it's so true. We're like, no one actually says it, but we're all kind of secretly hoping that there's a bit of a crash so that it's, like, entertaining.
That's like every movie, every chick flick, you know, you've got to have the downfall to have, like, the rise at the end. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Because once you see someone crash, then you like, you want them to win even more in the, you know.
Yeah, so true. It can't just all be up.
No, that would be boring, and then people just are jealous and hate you. All right. How did you end up in Nashville after college? What was the thought pattern behind that?
Well, so when I came when I was 17, I didn't know how long I would be here, honestly. I was like, oh, maybe I had got a 6-month visa in case. I was like, I don't want to go for like and just be able to stay a few weeks. And then in case something happens, then they'll be like, I'll be like, sorry, got to go, bye. But I came literally New Year's Eve. I arrived and the year that I finished school. 17 yep. And mum had helped me set up an internship at the Bluebird Cafe and the Bluebird. And, you know, with my whole Taylor Swift thing, I love Faith Hill, they all got discovered there and whatnot. And we loved the TV show Nashville. Have you seen that?
I haven't, but I've been told to watch it.
Okay. Well, a lot of it's set at the Bluebird. You know, these artists all get discovered there. And it's, you know, it's painting a pretty picture. No one really actually gets discovered there. You know, they've all built their own path, but you don't just walk in. But I went to a show that very night there because we'd organized it. And mum just got me the internship, honestly, by emailing the Erica who managed then. And she was like, oh, my daughter's coming, loves the Bluebird, doesn't know a single person and is a teenager. What can we do? And she's like, she want to like help out. Like she can't like really get paid because she's like, you know, like on a tourist visa kind of situation, but like, did she want to help out around and get to meet people? And I'm like, yes, mum woke me up at like 5 a.m. when she got the email. I remember mum running into my room saying, oh my God, Jazz, this has happened. And so I went in and I saw this writer's round. I always have this memory of it. Every year they do a great New Year's Eve round. And then I would go in, you know, on weekdays and it was snowing. It was like this polar vortex in America. Some days it was like minus 15 degrees Celsius. And Nashville's a very car driven town. There wasn't Uber back then. It was like you couldn't get anywhere. There's like one bus and it occasionally decides to show up. Like it's literally it. Okay. So I'd be trying to walk around everywhere in this freezing weather, get taxis when I could, but Erica would try and help drive me. And I did a songwriting course while I was here and I got to meet the best songwriters in the world, like every day. And it shocked me, but it showed me that it's almost impossible, but it's attainable. I got to see this round with Carly Pierce, who I'm sure you know, big country writer, big country artist here, signed to Big Machine, and around with her and Phil Barton, who I don't know if you know about Phil. He's a big hit songwriter here in Nashville, but he's Australian and he's from Melbourne too. And I got to speak to Carly a little bit afterwards and I said, I feel like you're like better than Kelly Clarkson at singing, honestly. And I literally think you're the best singer in the entire world. And she was so sweet, but she wasn't like a big name then or anything. And I went home a few weeks later and I messaged her and I said, you know, would I be able to get the chords to this one particular song you played? Because I kind of want to play it at my shows. And she replied like straight away. I didn't think she would even see my message. And
that's nice, yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, here are the chords. Do you want me to film like a tutorial video for you? And I'm like, what? and I was so inspired by her and so inspired by seeing Phil, because to see someone literally from Melbourne, like from around the corner, writing number one songs in Nashville, I was like, I didn't know that. I'd only seen Keith Urban do it. I didn't know that you could do this. I had chills just thinking about it. And I followed Carly Pierce on the journey. Like I'd follow her on social media. I'd see her playing at this new place called The Listening Room. It was new then and at the Bluebird. And then I saw she got signed to Big Machine Records. And this is when I was, you know, going through uni and I was like, oh my God, I've seen this girl rise and she's been doing this for a while. And then I moved to Nashville. So I, all through uni, I was like saving up. I stayed for 6 months in Tassie, just playing show after show after show, wineries, vineyards, bars, pubs. One of my friends, James, he played duos, gigs with me and went home to Melbourne a couple weeks, just came to Nashville. Again, didn't know anyone. In that month I was there before, you know, I was 17. I was basically a tourist. So I didn't know anyone, but I came in the summer and I chose to do that on purpose. Because it was so hard in the winter when everything was kind of shut down. And I also had decided that I had to wait until after I was 21 because you can't really get in a lot of places when you're under 21 here. Yeah. Came on over. I found a group of girls on Facebook that needed a roommate.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Literally. And they had just finished uni here at Belmont. They'd all studied music, so it seemed perfect, okay. You know. Mm-hmm. I came on in. I remember the second I got off the plane, I was wearing glasses, not my contact lenses, and they fogged up in the humidity. Oh. I knew about the National Songwriters Association because mm-hmm. I had been a member even in Melbourne, and I'd sent mm-hmm. songs in and they'd said, you know, I love this or work on this. And so that was the first place I went, really. I was like, yeah. Let's go there. And they mm-hmm. said, okay, these places around are good to meet people. Maybe go here. You might be able to get in and play a few songs. I bought a car within like a couple of weeks. That was always in my budget, in my plan. Yeah. A nice used car that I still have now that looks like it's been driving on a golf course, getting hit every day. I met people. I'm a very chatty person. So I meet mm-hmm. people quite easily. I feel like that's from my mom. I was like genetically given that. I got a job. I was on a visa that meant I could work very specific jobs. I got work hotel reception at a Hilton here.
Yeah, cool.
And just chatting. Got a couple shows here and there, writers' rounds, met some friends at the listening room who were working yep. as waiters there. Mm-hmm. I feel like in Melbourne and in Tassie, I didn't really know if you could write with other people. And
yeah,
I just here in Nashville, it's all you do is co-write.
Yeah,
it's just like it's whatever. And all the hit songs here on the radio, I mean, some the pop songs, I mean, I'm sure you've seen yeah. have like 8 writers on.
Yeah, like 8 to 12. It's ridiculous.
It's insane. But with country, you usually have like 2 to 4 or 5 kind of things sometimes.
Yeah. So you said you were inspired when you were 7 by Kacey Chambers. What was it that like actually drew you into music? Like what were you going through or what do you think it was?
What was it going through? I was 6 at Christmas and she was on and I just put my whiskey down. I thought I had this stuff, you know. I don't really know. I know about country music and that specifically, and it's because of the story. I don't resonate with certain types of pop when it's when there's no story to it. But then when there is a story, I'm like, this is my pop. And that's why, for example, when you have, I don't know, I can't even think of a specific example. Okay, Ariana Grande, she has certain songs where there's a story. Like she has a song called My Everything and it's from her first or second record or something. Oh no, it's called that. I think the record is called My Everything, honestly. Yeah. And that song is a story. But then she might have a different song and I can't even think of one, but it's not. And I won't relate to it's fun, the car jam, whatever, but I won't relate so much to that one. So I don't really enjoy it on such a deep level. And when I was just so little, I guess maybe I just wanted to cry in the car. I don't know. I wanted that heartbreak at 6 years old. Kacey Chambers specifically loves to, I think, get to the root of the heartache and,
yeah.
I mean, she does have a lot of sad songs. That it's just the truth. And it was The Captain, that was that album, and then Barricades and Brick Walls. And now I actually know her brother, Nash. He lives in Nashville, and he produced those albums. You know, I told him all this stuff, and it's pretty cool that's happened for me. And then I found and then we listened to Johnny Cash, and, I mean, the ultimate storyteller, and even Elvis, which isn't so country, but he has some of that stuff too. And I think that I find it hard sometimes, or at least maybe before I had like therapy, to tell people, or at least not to tell everyone how I feel. But to sing it, I guess you feel like there is a wall up, which mm-hmm. to most people, I think it would be the other way.
Yeah.
Because people are like, how do you sing? It's so vulnerable. Blah, blah, blah. Mm. But for singers and songwriters, I think it might be the opposite.
Maybe.
So
I definitely felt that. And I had that like, it's just a song, you know, don't read into it too much. Like,
yeah. But really, it's actually all my innermost feelings.
Which, I think about now and I think back to like when I very rarely would share a song with a friend or a family member. And it would usually be very dark, and that was not who I presented to the world. And I remember a few times people saying, like, where did that come from? Like, oh, it's just a song. And yeah. I felt so safe in that.
Yes.
And now I look at it and I'm like, wow, like that was so, so vulnerable.
Because it's like reading your diary.
Yeah.
But you're just singing it. Like mum would sometimes go, oh, who was that about? Mm. And then eventually I got to a stage where I said, please do not ask who it's about, what it's about, how much of it is true. I've actually had to start saying that to her about my Instagram captions too. Because I often write really long like blogs and I'm like, mum, you know, I don't say in the caption who it's about because there's a reason. And it might not be someone you know. Maybe it's not a specific person. It's just a general thought. Or maybe it's just someone else. I don't know.
Hiding behind the freedom. Yeah, hiding behind the freedom of it doesn't have to be about someone specific. Yeah.
Exactly. It used to always be, I mean, in songwriting. I mean, I'm sure you get this when you were little and it was like, it's about this one person specifically that I hate and he's so annoying or she aggravates me to my core and she's so condescending or whatever. And now it's that you take inspiration maybe from that one person, but then you get other ideas from other people and other people in the room or whatever.
Yeah, and so, you create the story. Or sometimes, like for me, I create a character of who I wish I could be. I don't know. And I've talked to some people about that sort of character creation within a song, and I think I'm falling more and more into that because it is sort of that fantasy writing. Or what is it? Like someone says, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Yes. I love that. And like the best comedians, I think, do that too, because they always start with like something to happen to them in real life. And then you're like, wait, no, this didn't happen. And you're like, no, part of it did. But if they just told the truth, it wouldn't be funny.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the same. No, I love it.
Yeah.
And I think like I'm trying to challenge myself now as well to allow myself to be more vulnerable and to come from a first person perspective. And I think just because I was hiding behind my songs for so long, but I think you have to get to a point of what you want to share and when you're ready to share it and all that sort of thing, because it's a very vulnerable thing to do.
Yes. And also, especially when you do all these interviews and things, and I have a lot with this song, particularly this X's and Y's song, people going, and so you went through a particularly hard breakup, da, 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 da. And then I go, well, I think everyone goes through something, da, 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 da. And you know, that's actually because this particular song, in all like honesty, is not about one specific guy. Yeah. And if you listen to the lyrics, it's, I don't call them exes, I just call them, like it isn't. Most of my other songs lines are generalized, are specific rather. But, thank you, sorry.
That's cool.
Yeah, most of them are more specific when they are, like, talking, like, hate on some dude. But this one isn't so much. It was just kind of like, I'm done, I'm over it. And then you get fun people, like, commenting on social media, like, oh, boys should know not to date a songwriter. And you're like, mostly that's my mum commenting that, honestly.
Oh, that's too funny. So now that you're writing, and I know you've got a couple of songs released, but what is the sort of thought behind when you're branding and you're releasing into the world? What do you think about that you want your audience to pick up on when they hear your music?
Right. I like that you didn't say, what's your sound?
I don't know what a sound is. I still haven't worked that one out.
That's because it's because people ask you that as well and you don't know how to answer.
No, I don't know. But I want to know what your purpose is, like what you want to put out there, you know?
My purpose is to get through every day. I just want to make people feel like someone understands them, because my favorite thing, and when I go, damn, is when I hear a song, is when someone writes something and I feel like they were in my head when they wrote it. That's why I think that people are so drawn to country music, because that's, you're like, how do you write that story? Because that's my story.
Yeah.
And that's why I put out I'm Fine as my first song, one of the reasons, because in pop now we're getting more and more songs about mental health, which is absolutely fantastic. But in country, when I moved to America, Nashville, you know, is technically the South, I noticed instantly there is this, the mental health stigma is still huge.
Mostly I'm just normal. Most days I'm okay.
they're coming from middle of the city, Melbourne. Everyone's constantly talking about, I'm going to my psychologist, I'm on Lexapro and
going to the gym, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and then often they're like, yeah, I go to the gym, but not really for my physical health, it's more for my mental health. And I'm like, yeah, great. And everyone's second kid has been hospitalized for something like that. And it's terrible, but it's because they addressed it and they didn't just hold it inside.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's like, no, everyone's just an alcoholic. I'm not even kidding.
That is like, a therapy, isn't it?
Like the literally, bartender. It's such a thing here. And I even had someone say to me in my first like month here, they said like this, they said, only nutcakes go to therapy. And I was like, and I said this, well, you're talking to a nutcake. And then thankfully I educated him, not that he asked for it, unsolicited advice, but I educated him on how many people go to therapy. And I like listed off a bunch of like celebrities that openly go to psychologists or therapists or whatever you want to call them. And he was like, what? And I was like, yes, it's just like going to like your GP. I felt like in the South, people needed to feel like someone understood them and their mental health struggles. And I was sick of also the media romanticizing mental health issues. And it was around the time that, I might get some hate for this, that 13 Reasons Why came out. And if you remember that TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I felt kind of like that it kind of glamorized.
It glamorized. Mental health struggles. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you have so many shows as well, like glamorizing eating disorders and things too. And I was like, if you actually had one of these things, or knew someone close to you that did, this is the last thing you would be doing.
Well, I mean, the thing is, a lot of those people need attention, and like everyone in the world needs attention. That is not a bad thing to want, because we all need it. We all need it. And mental health conditions or eating disorders and suicidal tendencies, a lot of the like a big portion of it is that attention deficit that people are, you know, really seeking it. And I think that show and like the whole concept of it actually just showed someone who did something bad get a lot of attention and like made it look like it was a good idea.
Yes.
You know, like this works. This is what's going to get you all this attention. Someone's going to write a TV show about you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why because they kind of have a media ban in Australia about talking about suicide. You know that, right?
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, like they don't, you know, it's not talked about on the news. It's not shared really on radio or media. You don't hear about your local dad down the road.
That's actually so true. Over here, I feel like maybe you do hear about that a bit more.
On the news?
I mean, I don't watch, I don't even have normal TV, but and maybe it's just like news outlets that I see online, but I feel like, or it could be social media that I see it, but I feel like I've heard about it more. It could be that I'm just more like culturally aware since I moved here, but I didn't know that that was a thing in Australia.
Well, I think it's actually probably good because of like what we just talked about, glamorizing suicide and giving people attention for something that, I mean, not that it used to be a crime. It's not a crime.
It's not a crime.
But it's showing people, because for a lot of people, sometimes their pure goal is to get on the news, you know, and hear about people stabbing someone because they just felt like they wanted, that's what they wanted to do to get attention. And so obviously removing that as a thing by not having it in the media is good, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk about it and we shouldn't talk about mental health and we shouldn't be there for our friends and family and be aware of it.
Right.
And pick up on the signs.
Hasn't like it all been over the news how like mental health that struggles have like increased significantly over COVID and everything?
Oh, huge. Yeah.
So, I mean, they hide is like actual suicides. They are not hiding.
They're not hiding the idea of it. No.
Of just mental health in general.
It's hard. I think it's hard for people to understand because it's not in the media. It's hard for people to understand how bad it is. Like, male. It's just, and males are the worst in Australia, like for like the statistics.
It's absolutely terrifying.
There's like all these mental health first aid courses that people can do like online. And like I did one of those and it's just such
a mental health first aid course. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yep. It's a total thing, which I can't even remember why I did it now, but
I'm look that up. Because everyone should do that. I feel like that should be like a prerequisite for so many jobs. Like,
songwriters. You
know, I mean, right, literally, yeah. Like bartenders, because I feel like bartenders are basically like unqualified therapists.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hairdressers.
And it's a quick course. It literally is just training you how to read the signs that someone might be thinking about suicide or mental or self-harm. And it's also just about how to talk to someone about it and how to refer them to special help if they need it, you know? Like it's just like a one-day course online that I did via Zoom, you know? But I also have like my own extensive therapy history.
Right, of course. I mean, yeah. I'm so glad that you have done that for yourself, and I have done that too. I actually just got a friend, one of my best friends, for years has been saying that she would do this. I've only known her the last year, but she's like, yeah, we'll do it for years. And, you know, and a doctor would just give her Prozac or whatever. And I actually just got her to go to therapy. I think on Thursday she has her first session. I had to like spoon feed her, like, this is where you'll go. They will do it on a sliding scale, so you won't have to pay heaps. And yeah. I know that maybe a family member doesn't want you to go, but you're going to go and you're not going to tell them. And then we will address it afterwards, because you just need to go. And she's finally doing it, and I'm so happy, because sometimes
my husband had to do that to me.
People.
Yeah, right, I needed someone to hold my hand for the first few sessions. I just couldn't do it, you know, and I don't even know, probably I wasn't scared of the stigma or anything. I was scared of what they might actually find inside me.
Yes, no, I think that's what it is for a lot of people. Yeah. I think that's what it is. And everyone has a different thing about maybe why they don't want to go, but it's basically just talking to a friend that is not going to judge you. It's an objective third party observer that is paid to not judge you.
And help validate you and what you're going through. And
exactly.
Honestly, like most of the time you do all the talking, but it's just getting it out as well, like journaling, but actually talking to someone and someone going, hey, that's okay. That's actually quite normal.
Yeah, that's quite normal. That's the best when they go, oh, you know, you don't know how many clients I have that da la 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 la. And it's so common for women in your age group to blah, 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 blah. And
yeah.
Yeah, no, that's
and how good
so
does it
true.
Feel when someone says that to you? Who's supposed to be qualified? You're like, oh, thank goodness, I'm not like a complete weirdo. Yeah,
exactly. And I think it's important to remember for people as well that often your first therapist may not be the right one for you, but that doesn't mean that you should give up on finding one that is.
Yeah,
people get
like
scared
GP,
off maybe if it. Yeah. Right. They're not just like going to give you all the answers. Like leave. Like you've got to find one that works well for you. Like with friends.
It's like dating.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not as hard as dating.
It shouldn't be.
And
I'm also like a big believer that like pills, like antidepressants and stuff like that should be used in conjunction with some sort of talk therapy just to help get you through. But like it shouldn't
it's
just
been
be
proven
take a pill for the rest of your
both
life.
Both of
you
them.
Know?
The both of them together is the most successful way to combat mental illness. Like obviously like they can both help individually, but with significant mental illness, both of them together is very, very, very effective. And it took me a while, until I was 21 to go, I'm 25 now, to go to like a psychologist for the first time. Because when I was just 15, 16, one of my doctors was just like, take Prozac, take fluoxetine. And I did. And, you know, because even back then, because that's nearly 10 years ago now, even just then it wasn't that common to, you know, and
go talk
but
to
then,
someone.
Yeah, as I've been going for years now to therapists here, and I've got so many because I'll be back in Australia for a bit, I'll be here, I do some on Zoom, then my one moved to a different practice, then whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like I know them like the back of my hand. And I'm don't worry, I know how it goes down. And they're like, okay.
That's really good.
But the song anyway, so it landed with a lot of people really well. I had people messaging me, like people I didn't know, you know, like from across the world, kind of going like, I've never had a song that I felt really understood me.
Beautiful.
But I feel like this one did. And to have a song in country that addressed it, you know, it definitely wasn't the safest bet to have your first ever country single be a song about mental health. And I knew that. But I just, you know, essentially I just needed enough press to get me my visa, and it did that. but to have a song like with my goal being to connect with people and make them feel like someone understood them was, and that to have that be achieved with that song really, you know, really was great. And then when I went back home a few months later and I did a little acoustic solo tour around the southeast of Australia, like Victoria and up Tamworth and stuff in Tassie. And I was playing some random show at like a beach town, and there was this girl there, random girl, and there with a couple of friends, and I started playing it. She knew all the words, and I was like,
wow.
I was like, how do you know this? Like, I'm in a random beach town in Australia, and I didn't have like a press team. Like, she's like, I came to see you. Like, I love this song. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, this is social media did this. And like, my friend who was there, one of my friends filmed it. And it's that kind of thing that, you know, shows you how your song connects with someone. And my niece, even, she's what, 10, 11 now, Bella. She was at my house last year when I was in Australia. Yeah. And she goes, Alexa, play I'm Fine by Jasmine Fade. And sorry if anyone's listening to this and it does that. But because it'll do that. And then it starts playing. And I'm like, Bella, do you like know what this song is about? And she goes, I think so. She goes, it's about knowing that it's okay if you're not okay. And aww. I put a tear in my eye, and I was like, oh my, like, she's also like the smartest, like 10-year-old you're ever going to meet in your entire life. But it was so touching that my brother had like, obviously, you know, could explain to her about all of this. It was just like chilling to me how in a great, the greatest way, you know, and I loved it. So yeah.
Well done. But it's a very brave thing to do. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I got to wait a while to release another mental health song now. We got this one.
Well, I mean, I think every single song I've released so far has been about mental health, and it's been 12 over less than 2 years. So,
yes,
I mean, do whatever you want.
Yes, exactly.
But,
exactly. I think
that like what you've done though is been very vulnerable and shown people that it's okay. And you probably will never know the full extent of how you've helped people. And I think that that's beautiful, and that in a way, because of your experience going to therapy and doing the work on yourself, it's going to impact your music. Yeah. And in a way like that, just like we said, it feels so good to feel validated in who we are and hear a story that maybe you wouldn't necessarily always hear. Like, you're doing that through your music, and that's going to help people feel that same validation, even if they're not going to a therapist, you know?
Right. That's so true. I think so. And the guy that I wrote it with, Spencer, he wrote it with me because his partner at the time has bipolar disorder. Is it disorder or disease? I don't know. Disorder. Mm-hmm. Surely it's not disease. It's not disease. I don't know. I don't know what it's called.
Just mental health thing.
Yes, exactly. And it was very, wonderful for me to write it with someone who entirely understood what I was, the message I was trying to convey. And we wrote it in like, you know, less than an hour. And
oh, don't you love those writes?
They're always honestly the best, basically all the best songs I've written have been those kind of writes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What about co-writing? Yeah. What has been your best sort of co-writing experience?
I couldn't pinpoint one because I love that. Earlier I referenced someone having, you know, friends that were so new at the time that then were there for me when I was going through that really difficult time in my life. My friend Dana, she's actually Phil Barton's partner, Phil the Australian writer. I didn't know Phil properly yet, but I met Dana at a writer's round, not knowing that she was Phil's partner. And because that's Nashville. And I saw her play and I was like, Dana, do you want to write? And she's like, yes. And I went to her house and it was literally like a month after this breakup I'd had. And I had, I even moved out yet? I don't know. I had to keep living with this guy for like a month. It was terrifying. Oh. Yeah. Good times in a one bedroom apartment. Yeah. So I showed up at her house and she was like, what do you want to write about? And I'm like, oh, I'm not telling about the breakup. And I started crying because you do that when you've lived with a guy for a year and he's, you know, and she said to me, you know, it's funny because I literally just came straight to my house today after writing with her again. But she said to me, you know, you have to try and remember that everything in life, whether it's good or bad, is temporary. And I don't know how long this is going to last for you, but it will be temporary.
Yeah.
And we ended up writing a song called Temporary.
Yeah.
Cool. And it's one of my favorite songs we've ever written. And it was the first write we ever had. We wrote it so quickly. I play it at like all my shows and people love it. When I first, one of the first shows I played that at, all these people came up afterwards and asked like, where can I hear it? You know, and I'm like, oh, it's not out. And that, you know, that's the best like thing when you get that.
Yeah.
And
awesome. All right. Well, I'd love to see you if you ever come up to the Gold Coast from Melbourne.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I'm begging to get to Melbourne, but not with the COVID stuff going on down there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I love the Gold Coast. One of my family members actually had ever placed up at Surfers. So
yeah, nice.
Love it up there. So beautiful.
It is. Okay. So tell me, in all of that you've done, the courses and the degree and traveling.
Yes.
What would you say the best advice is that you've ever been given?
I really think it is kind of what I said, and it goes for both good and bad. And I will reason it that everything is temporary, and my backing for it, my body paragraphs are that the bad things, it's statistically impossible, like no matter what, that you can feel the same way forever. Like science has proven that. So if you feel absolutely terrible right now, there's no way you can feel the same way forever. So it's going to go away. You're going to feel even just a slight increment better someday. And good things cannot last forever either. So that's sad. But make them the best that they can be. Make the time that you spend, you know, with your family or your friends, make it the best. You know, put down your phone for a second. You don't have to like reply to someone the second that they message you. It's okay, because if you're spending time with the like people that you love, that's better. Enjoy. I know everyone says eat the cupcake, but eat the cupcake. Like you know, I've really enjoy had to work it. On that the last few months. And in this industry, you get really like, I must work all the time. I must look the best. I must be the best. But at the end of the day, I say this sounds so bad, but like when you're like on your deathbed, you're going to look back. Yeah. You're not going to remember the number of like number one songs you had, or, you know, how much money you made in 2019. You're going to remember like that road trip you went on with your friend when your car broke down and you had to change the tire and it was really funny. Like you're going to remember that stuff. Yeah. And I've really kind of just learned that in the last like, yeah, I think, because everything is temporary. That's the thing.
Lena, I have three little kids and they're growing up so quickly, and it's scary to think that.
Oh my goodness, how old are they?
So quickly. 8, 6, and 5. So they're not babies anymore, but it feels like
they're
they were
little
babies
people
like
now.
Yesterday.
They're little people.
Yeah. And
oh my goodness.
I'm kind of hating that moment where it's like, oh my gosh, they're just going to be adults and like leaving the house so soon. I just want to enjoy it as much as possible while they're here.
Yes, but you are enjoying it. Don't spend time.
Yeah.
Don't waste time worrying.
No. Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it as much as possible.
And the fact that you've thought about it is important, I think, because it means that you've addressed it and that you will enjoy it. A lot of people don't even think about it.
Our children are the best to hang out with. Like I literally got a bit exhausted yesterday because it's school holidays and my five-year-old for 24 hours has been going on about ninja training and how he's got to go on this secret mission that he's not allowed to tell me about.
No, but, he's not. You know, like,
it's just
no, he's not.
Too adorable.
Oh, I want a child. And all you want to do when you're a little kid is grow up. But when you're grown up, all you want to do is be a little kid. When they're that little, and they're like, they see a bug and they're like, Mom, why is the ant staring at me? It's not, but it is. And they just have this way that is so amazing. Yeah. I love it. I have so many nieces and nephews because I have so many older brothers and cousins. Yeah. And when I see them, it's this new energy that you can't replicate unless you truly are that young.
Yeah, a children's belief and the way that they see the world is so exciting and infectious, and you know, they come running, it's like, hey, I found a spider, you've got to come look at it, and like you can't help but be really excited to go see this spider.
I know, even if you're not genuinely, you then get excited. Like
exactly.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, I can't wait to see I can't wait to see kids when I go home. And I didn't used to be excited. I used to be like, oh, kids, ugh. But I'm past it now. Like, yeah, I think that's a thing a lot of people go through when they're like a teenager. You know, they're like, oh, kids, so annoying, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you become, so precious, you get a little bit older, you're like, no, look at them. Like, this is amazing. Like, and look at them, like, growing and how, and I see how my brothers are all raising their kids differently and how that in itself is amazing. Like,
there's no right or wrong way. It's just
the way,
you know,
and they'll do it their own way. That's perfect. Each individual way is perfect. And I just, you know, I truly appreciate what you're saying because I think it's fascinating. I couldn't do it, honestly. I mean, obviously right now I wouldn't do it.
That's
but,
what I said.
Is that what you said too? Okay, because I get so overwhelmed just thinking about it. I'm like, oh my God, I can hardly take care of myself. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, you just do it. I wasn't prepared, you know. I think I've definitely met people who are like, I'm going to get my whole life in order before I have kids. And like, honestly, you are never prepared for kids. Like,
right? You just can't get your life in order.
You just jump and learn how to swim. That's what you
do. I think so. I think there'll always be another thing you can do before you have kids. There'll always be like another thing. I just want to do this. But when you want to have them, like when you have them, you just deal with it. You do it.
Yeah.
Like it's the most natural thing in the world. Mm. Like, so, you know.
And you'll never have anything that feels more successful than having a child.
Oh, I can't imagine.
It's the most valuable thing that anyone will ever have.
Created and raised a human.
Well, I'm raising three humans.
So oh, my goodness. We'll see how I go.
I mean, the end goal of having a child is just to keep them alive. And, like, that is success.
I mean, if you do that, you've succeeded.
Exactly.
Everything else is just a bonus.
It sounds simple, but that's actually – it's harder than you think. It's every
– Yeah. I do hear, though, babies are tougher than they look. You know,
eventually, after the first few months,
I'm always scared, you know, pressing the button on their head that, you know, the self-destruct.
Because they're so fragile and dependent and, so vulnerable. Yeah,
I think that's that was a genetic flaw, like not genetic, but that they have that button, that they should not come out with that. We've made it this far with keeping humans alive. We have not gone extinct just yet. You know, we got pretty close this last year, I think, but, you know, we made it through and population is still rising. We do have an epidemic of population growth.
Yes.
It's okay. David Attenborough said everyone should just have less kids and that'll help climate change. So,
oh, go away, David.
Yeah, that was stupid.
That's what China tried to do.
right. That's what they tried to do. So instead of, well, it would just mean we wouldn't have to use so many like reusable bags and things. We just have less kids. I guess that's a thing. But, you know, I mean, you've only had three. Here, every other family has like eight.
Nice. Go America.
So I mean, I feel like it's like a southern thing, I mean. You know.
Yeah, okay. Like my grandmother had nine. I could have had more, definitely. Like, my husband and I have only, you know, three times. And we have three kids, but we made a specific choice to stop.
Yeah, like, no, we're done now. Thank you.
That's enough. Mentally, that was all I could deal with because I had pretty bad postnatal depression. But it forced me to deal with my stuff, you know, so.
Uh-huh.
All right, I'm gonna ask you the big question. If you could co-write with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Well, I don't want to say Taylor Swift. It's like, don't meet your idols, you know?
Yeah.
So I won't say that. I do want to have dinner with her. I do want to have like a gal's night. Like, I always answer my phone when a stranger rings in case it's like Taylor Swift inviting me to a sleepover because you never know.
I hope that happens one day.
It could happen, right? She lives in Nashville half the time. So like she might just be like around the corner picking me up in her like Escalade or like Range Rover, you know, and just like, get in, loser. We're going to a sleepover. And I'll be like, yeah. With like some freshly baked cookies because she loves to bake and, you know, whatever. I might say like Liz Rose. Liz wrote Tim McGraw and You Belong With Me and All Too Well, which is my favorite song of all time. She wrote them all with Taylor. And I don't really know Liz, but I was sitting at a table the other night at the listening room and I looked and she was sitting next to me and she bought all our drinks and Phil, she's very kind. Phil is signed to Liz's publishing label. And so he writes to her like every week, every day, whatever.
Brilliant.
And, and I, you know, has dinner with her and whatever. And I'm, you know, Phil and Dana are like, Dana's one of her temporary with like my Nashville parents. I had Christmas at their house this last year. You know, I couldn't go back home. So it was sweet. It was just me, Phil, Dana, and Dana's son.
I was like their
other kid. But Liz just like writes the stories that I wish I could tell. And she does it in a way that like for Taylor, I think she writes Taylor's stories, but helps shape them in the way that maybe Taylor couldn't at the time. And to think that I am like, and you know, and I have friends that a friend or two that are also signed to Liz's publishing. Like, it's a very small publishing house. So it's not that, you know, easy. Obviously none of them are easy to get in on, but I'm kind of close-ish to maybe write with her. But since not my whole life, but you know, a long time, over a decade, she's kind of been my big one. And accidentally, I mean, through Phil and Dana, and I didn't even know Dana was with Phil, and then Phil happens to be signed to Liz, and I don't really believe in like signs, but like, you know, you kind of help. Yeah. And that Phil's from Melbourne, and like, it just like is like a very magical thing.
Yeah.
So
I think we need to have things that kind of help us realize that we're in the right spot, doing the right thing at the right time.
Yeah, definitely. Because sometimes I'll go the other way. And when you have a day where a few things go wrong in a row and you're like, that's it. I'm not meant to be here. Probably should sign off. Like,
Going to quit while ahead before something really bad happens.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's good to follow your gut, though.
I'm trying. It gets hard as well when you have people that you see are doing like what you think is a lot more successfully than you you think they're doing it without help sometimes, but then you realize that, no, that's actually not true. Half this town is full of kids that have parents with millions and millions of dollars, or their parents help them. I know a lot of people that's parents moved here for the kid when they were like 11 or 12.
To a few of those kids.
And that's great for them. And I don't have any spite for them. I think that I always have to keep that in perspective. Like I moved here when I was 22 and I got a degree that I had a scholarship for, and then I did all that. Yeah. And my parents are so supportive, and they help me pay for my medications because I have a lot of medications I have to take. They do. And that's great. And they are honestly, I think I have the best parents in the entire world. And no one could ever say anything otherwise. No one could prove otherwise. And I think my friends probably think I have the best parents in the world too, because they have given me so much wisdom and they're just so loving and caring and would give the world for me. But unfortunately, again, as I'm sure you're aware, this industry is one that kind of can be bought.
A mixture of talent though as well.
And the reality you can't be completely Jasmine, talentless.
Yeah, but like Jasmine, no one can ever be you. You know, you are there's no competition, because no one's ever going to be able to be a better Jasmine Bay than you can be.
That's 100%
That is where your confidence should come from, because you know, we need you to be exactly what you were designed to be so that we can experience whatever it is that you're going to give to us.
Exactly.
As you. And if you're trying to be Taylor or anyone else, it's not going to be you. And that's not what we want, because we get Taylor from Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know,
exactly.
We don't need more.
We're getting another version of the same one as well.
Yeah, right?
Like
we just need you. And then now you can just like, once you get through that, and I think that's something that all women kind of, we go through this process of learning to accept ourselves and love ourselves. Uh-huh. I honestly think that's what the 20s are for, is to learn to love yourself. But once you get that, just, you know, you don't even notice anything else going around. You just do it. Just be you. And do you, and that's all you can do, you know?
That's so something my dad always says, all you can do is your best. And if you've done that at the end of the day, then that's all you can hope for. Like, because maybe someone else's like best, quote under quotation marks, looks better than yours, but that's not your best. Like, you don't know what they've got going on. what they've had to go through or haven't had to go through and who's behind the sidelines. And yeah, comparison is 100% the thief of joy. And in this industry where everything is thrown up online too, not everything, rather.
To fall into, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it kind of hard to get rid of that sometimes. But, you know, I consciously have, you know, for example, like unfollowed certain people on social media or like muted their Instagram stories and things like that. People that I just know for me personally are not helping me with my, where I'm going in the industry and not helping me mentally. Whether it's like a body image thing or whether it's just what shows that they're playing, where they're getting numbers that they're getting on Spotify, things like that.
And how great that you can just press a mute button, you know, or block.
Exactly.
I think we're just about done. Is it the podcast is yours. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish up?
Well, let me think. Oh, well, you know what? I've talked so much about I'm Fine, but I will briefly talk about X's and Y's.
Okay.
This song, if anyone would like to listen, is a song I recently put out. It's for anyone that is like, has an ex, whether it's an ex-partner, an ex-friend, an ex-anyone in your life that in hindsight seems like a why. Like, why did I waste so much time on you in the first place? Whether, you know, anything like that. And it's kind of like a whimsical twist on it because I felt like there were a lot of sad country songs that were like melancholy about the breakup or the unfriending or whatever. And I'm one who writes a lot of those sad ones myself. But why not, you know, when you get over that sadness, you kind of, I feel like, say to your friends and you go like, oh my God, why did I waste so much time on that? So you have a giggle and you listen to X's and Y's and you stream it a million times and add it to all your playlists and send aggressive emails to Spotify.
That's what I did.
To add it to their editorials. thank you so much. Yeah. Apple added it to their editorial playlist, but Spotify, not so kind. So if you want to contact them.
I like Apple, so that's cool.
Yeah, Apple. Well, Apple, I mean, we all liked Apple more because they paid their artists better, you know, as well.
Slightly, so, yeah.
Yeah, slightly. Well, either way, at the start, you know, Taylor Swift, again, we've come back to her always. She said, you know, they're like an essay to them. And then she started like being on their ads on TV and stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, if anyone wants to listen to that, there's a lyric video too. You can look at it, jasminebade.com. No E at the end of Jasmine. Don't know why. My parents couldn't afford the E. I don't really understand it. But look that one up. I think I'm on every social media platform. I think really, I'm on Snapchat, but I don't use it. Because there's too much.
I don't understand Snapchat. Calm down. I use it, but I don't understand it. I'm going to put all your links in the description of the podcast, and there'll be a blog on the website, songwritertrist.com, as well. So
that'd be amazing.
If anyone wants to connect to you, hear your music, go to your YouTube channel,
message
or whatever,
me too.
They'll do that.
I talk to everyone. I don't just like get your message and then like ignore it. You know, I'll talk to you. And, you know, if you want to help me decide the next song, you know, look it up on, look up on TikTok, look up on Instagram, some little demos I have of me like lip syncing to them, you know, because everyone does that now. Apparently that's enjoyable to watch someone lip syncing in their car.
Sounds good to me. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jasmine, for jumping on. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Well, hopefully we'll speak soon.
Yes. Thanks for joining our songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. The crowd, no one can.